Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee and a fabulous service department to back it all up at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. Bottom of the seventh, the Phillies lead the Braves 7-3. Sir Anthony Dominguez came in, just pitched them through the sixth inning. See, that's the playoffs. You're going to pick your spots a little differently. And how to use guys, and they brought Dominguez in the sixth. All right, time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
They'd have two downs to try to get the yardage. Let's see what happens on third. Carr, Adams, downfield. He's got it! Touchdown, Las Vegas! If you have an opportunity right here offensively to take the lead, you do it. They hand to Jacobs, and he, no signal, they didn't get it. And the Chiefs still lead by one.
Before I answer anything else, I want to apologize to the guy. Some guy running off the field, and he ran, jumped in front of me. We're coming off the field, and I bumped into him and kind of pushed him, and then he ended up on the ground. So I want to say sorry to him for that, because that was just frustration mixed with him running and literally just running in front of me. And that was, shouldn't have responded that way, but that's how I initially responded. So I want to apologize to him for that.
That was after the game, obviously. I think he ended up in the hospital, right? I believe.
Yeah, he took himself to the hospital.
And he has filed charges, I believe.
Yep.
All right. Well, we'll see how that plays out. All right. Aeneas Hawkins in the final half hour. Now, as a public service announcement, should I mention what the next segment's about, just in case?
I mean, get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
I don't want to create mass depression here. But we are going to talk to Neil Coulong about the... Sorry, a little something there in my throat. The Steelers. We're going to talk about the Steelers. This is the way we used to do the Eagles segments.
No, senor! No, senor! No, senor!
You guys haven't been good for 3 years. All right. Finally, you got a team. You're going to be a wreck on Sunday night. You're going to be a wreck.
Yeah, there's no denying it. Cowboys week is always different for me.
I don't really think too much about this stuff. All right, so, Cowboys week is different for you.
It is.
No, the week is different for me. All right. Got out, played some golf today, live life to the fullest. Big game on Saturday. Somebody asked me today, how do you prepare differently for a game like this? I'm like, what are you talking about?
Did they not hear the chopping wood and mowing grass story the day of the Auburn game?
I don't prepare any differently. I'm going to watch 22 tapes of them doing the same thing over and over again. Like, no. I've watched them on tape. I've gone to practice. I've got charts. I've got a lot of information. Same as I do every week. No different. There is a consistency as to what works in this business. I'm talking about in this business. If I'm a coach, maybe a little different, but I'm not a coach. All right. So let's talk to Neil Coulong about the Steelers. Neil, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about the Steelers. My first question is why?
That's the question everybody has. Sounds like a philosophy final. Just that's the test. Why?
The opening drive. Pickett drives them downfield. They get a field goal out of it. And I remember I looked at everybody and said, now here comes the challenge. I said, he was great with the script. Now they have to improvise. That part didn't go so well.
I felt exactly the same. I might have even used those exact words. That's Pickett on script. And to be honest, I think he looked better than I thought he was going to. I think he looked better on script than Trubisky had. I think there were some plays that were left out on the field, in fact. And that became the theme of the game more than anything. Two different perspectives you got to look at here. It's easy to say, very plain and simple, nobody played well because they only scored 3 points. I'm like, all right, well, by that logic, there's only one team that ever plays well any season. That simply can't be true. As a team collectively, no, they played horribly. I mean, playing poorly, like snap to snap, is one thing, but they had Mike Tomlin used the word in the press conference today. I don't think he's ever used before. Catastrophic meltdowns on a few plays. Yeah. It was bad. Like, oh my God, I can't believe I just saw that. And it happened 3 plays into the game. Trey Norwood, to me, this was Norwood. You hear arguments one way or another. Somebody on 3rd and 10, somebody has to spy Josh Allen, okay? Minka Fitzpatrick is probably the best guy to do that. I think the Bills were aware of that, and they ran a deeper post from their end zone in the off chance that Minka is not in the middle of the field, which he wasn't. So for whatever reason, it seemed everybody on the field assumed then that there would be man coverage on Gabe Davis on the outside.
Right.
Everyone seemed to know that except for Trey Norwood.
Not good.
Who grossly blew coverage. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens when you get a 98-yard touchdown pass. It really just a horrendous play from a player who knows a lot better than to do that. That doesn't help Kenny Pickett at all. I get it. But Pickett marches the team fairly well. Some miscues later in the drive. They get a field goal in a tough place to kick and a bad day to kick. All right, we can handle this. It's okay. At that point, I don't think Pickett's play went down. I think most of the rest of the team had bad games. I don't use this lightly at all. You know the amount of criticism that I've put on Chase Claypool.
Yes.
That might have been Claypool's worst game.
Yeah.
He was awful. He's got to get it right. I'm not sure what's going on there. The slot adjustment that they're trying to get him to make is just simply not working. And with the way George Pickens is playing, I don't know. If Calvin Austin, if they want him to play the slot and that's their plan, I don't think Claypool is going to get on the field if that's really what they want to do. Right. He's not a slot receiver, and it's just not working. Deontay Johnson had a bad game. I have more faith in Johnson to be able to pick that up and get it right for next week than I do Claypool. But when your two primary receivers, by and large, are having really bad games, you're going to struggle. They really did not want to get Pat Freiermuth involved in the passing game a whole lot. We've seen that a couple times. Eventually, he got George Pickens involved, who showed yet again the star quality that he has. There's no excuse for them not getting him the ball 10-plus times every game anymore. It didn't happen early enough. And once again, though, the real problem top to bottom was the continuous belief and effort that Najee Harris is going to make hay running the ball. It just doesn't happen to the point where it's not even a question anymore. It's plain and obvious. Jalen Warren is the better running back of the two. And if that's a problem with your evaluation and your scouting, okay, you might have to just kind of eat this one, because the undrafted rookie is snap to snap playing a lot better than the first round pick is. If Najee is hurt, okay, I would argue that your eyes are bringing you to the hole, not the feet, and Najee isn't seeing it, healthy foot or not. He doesn't see it. If he doesn't trust it, he shouldn't be playing. It's as simple as that. He's not getting any better, and it was bad. He had a lot of bad runs in this game. When you are relying on that, when you are planning your offensive game plan is to have your running back carry the ball that often, and it's clear that it isn't working against a great defensive team, you don't really have much left except to take your whooping and drive home. And that's basically what happened. The Steelers didn't compete in this game beyond the first drive. They were in a low leverage situation for most of the game, so I don't want to put a whole lot of optimism into Pickett's performance. But if you're going to take anything away from this game, the Pickett to Pickens combination worked well for Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And that might be the only optimistic thing that came out of this game.
When you're dealing with a small margin for error, the precision that you need to play with, under the old Bill Belichick thing, do your job. That means all 11 people have to be precise in every play. That's a lot of pressure because they can't make up for it because they don't have the margin of error that they used to have.
I'd agree with that completely, to the point where I would say they needed to be at that level to compete with a team that's as strong top to bottom as the Bills are. And the level that they brought, I don't think would beat any team in the NFL yesterday on Sunday. It was a horrendous performance, to the point where I don't think we've ever seen Mike Tomlin as indignant at the microphone after the game. And he was basically the same today, too. He's not happy. He shouldn't be happy. And he's right. This is not something that's going to be fixed in a day. They've got a lot of work they need to do. A lot of things need to get fixed very quickly. And this team had an uphill battle in front of it from training camp. Yeah. And they've lost their best player. They've already made the quarterback change. They're getting a very underwhelming effort from their two top receivers. Offensively, the offensive line, I think, is stepping forward in a better direction. It's not a great unit, but it looks a lot better than it did in the preseason. But overall, the entire offense is a D minus to an F right now. And you're putting a rookie quarterback previously against one of the best defenses in the game. Next week, you're going up against one of the best defensive coaches in the game. It's not even trial by fire. I mean, it's above that, and they need a lot of guys to help bolster something to at least not get them embarrassed on the field, and that's a full possibility right now. We really don't know what direction this is going to go in anymore, and it's just a weird place to be.
Yeah, it is a weird place to be, and it has not helped. You know, Kurt, you mentioned, obviously, you referenced Watt being out. Pickens is going to be a terrific player for them. Losing Freiermuth did not help Kenny at all in that game. Because to me, the only two dependable guys he has in the passing game are Freiermuth and Pickens. You know, maybe Harris to a point, but that's it. And nobody else in that passing game is reliable, including his offensive line and the other two receivers.
Yeah, through five games, impossible to argue with that. Refresh me. Freiermuth went down later in the game.
He did. Yeah.
They only gave him two targets. What I would say is that security blanket does need to be there. That's going to hurt him over four games. Yeah. For however long Freiermuth is out, that will be a problem. And it's considering kind of the way the winds are blowing in the league right now, concussions are something they're really going to pay attention to. Not that they shouldn't have before, and I'm not going to get into that, but Freiermuth was pretty bad. That was a nasty hit.
It was.
You hope he's okay. He's had a couple of these. We'll see how long he's going to be out, but that's a problem now, too. You don't have Freiermuth. Now Zach Gentry is your primary tight end.
Yeah.
With two underperforming wide receivers, one of which you just gave a contract extension to, and the other one still is cheap for two more years, you're not seeing the motivation out of either of them. And there might be, that might be part of the reason why. So what Pickett is going to do to generate offense, I I hate to say it, but it might just be above his physical capabilities right now. And I'm not sure what they're going to do, but seems to me we already know what they're going to do, which is continue to run the ball with a running back who's averaging 3.3 a carry.
This is a game, Neil, where it's going to tell me a lot about where the Steeler defense happens to be. Because I don't care what anybody's the Tampa Bay offense has been no better than okay so far. And Brady, I know Brady's coming off a 300-plus game, but he's been for his standard, he's been no better than okay to this point. To me, it's going to tell us a lot about where the Steeler defense is, because if Tampa Bay goes out and they clear 30 points, there's, you know, obviously Watt's not there, but that's a gigantic problem because Tampa Bay offensively has done enough to be 3-2, but they are not a dominating offensive team.
Yeah, I mean, a couple things with that. Brady at 300 yards is probably status quo. You expect that. Pickett just threw for 300 yards. It doesn't necessarily mean that things worked. You know, it's a byproduct of what they had to do, trailing by 5 touchdowns for a good chunk of the game. I hate to use the cliche, but if we've ever seen a get-right opportunity for a team led by Tom Brady, this is it. He's ripped the Steelers apart. I don't know how many times in his career. Things are not going well in Tampa Bay. There's no doubt about that. I'm not going to get into whatever is happening with Tom Brady off the field. I can't stand that stuff. But
neither can I.
Something is not working overall. Yeah. Call that whatever you want.
Agreed.
This is a great opportunity, though, because this defense is staggering. How it's even upright right now is a question. You had a guy wearing number 16 playing cornerback in the fourth quarter of that game. I didn't even know he was on the team. It's stuff like that isn't helping a defense that's already depleted, already knocked down.
Yeah.
Cam Hayward was, in my opinion anyway, the only player on defense who had a game above average. Yeah. And Cam was really good for what Cam was asked to do. Mm-hmm. Cam was really good. Nobody else played well around him.
Right.
And they got shredded. I mean, think of it this way. They had 2 3-and-outs for the Bills offense to end that game. 2 consecutive 3-and-outs. They knelt down 3 times.
Yeah.
On top of that, they ran a total of 54 plays. They gained 552 yards on 54 plays, and they scored 38 points. If you take out the kneel down / 3-and-outs at the end, when obviously it's long over, they almost scored a point a play.
Yeah.
And that's like a historic level game. I mean, the Steelers, what that basically means is the Steelers' defense did next to nothing to prevent Buffalo from doing whatever it wanted to do the entire game. That's a really hard game to come back from. Yeah. Now, it's funny. We were talking off air. I remember talking to you back in 2013 after the Patriots boat raced the Steelers.
Yep.
What was that, like 57-30 or something like that?
Yes.
The Steelers got 2 touchdowns in the last 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That game was on that level. Somehow, the Steelers started a 3-game winning streak after that and then won 6 out of their final 8. I don't think this team can do that.
Yeah.
They're in significant trouble, and it just kind of goes along with what I feared going into this season, was really their offense is going to struggle for a while. Doesn't matter. It's going to be a problem of with lots of faces. Lots of things are going to be wrong with this offense right away. At the end of the day, though, their defense is really thin. And one injury to one key player, hint, hint, and the whole thing is going to fall apart. And that's where they are now. They don't have any playmakers. They don't have anybody that's making a difference, that's imposing anything upon an opposing offense, with the exception of Cam Hayward. And Hayward hasn't even been at his absolute best. I don't know how much he's going to have week to week, but nobody else is doing anything. And they've made their bed. This is where they are.
Neil, always a pleasure. Thanks for the uplifting conversation.
It's really hard. I don't know if we've ever felt it this desolate.
See, then, you referenced the Patriot thing, which was a bad game in 2013, and you and I were on the show talking about it. But they had different personnel back then.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's the difference. Right now, they don't have all the parts in place.
Nope.
And when you don't have all the parts in place, it's a tougher slog.
You learn how the Jets have lived for the better part of the last 30 years. You know, it's just really hard to see how they're able to turn this around at this point.
If you're a Jets season ticket holder over the last 25 years, there are two things that come to mind. You really do love football and the Jets. And number two, you have disposable income. All right, so that's who you are. Neil, thanks so much. Appreciate you, as always, my friend.
Definitely. Thanks for having me, guys.
You, sir, are my hero!
Really sounds like some of the same answers we've had from Eagles guests the last couple of years.
No, senor! No, senor! No, senor!
I mean, really. The thing about it, you haven't been very good. I thought your playoff game was good. Were you impressed?
No, senor! No, senor! No, senor!
just kidding you. It is now the pendulum has swung dramatically to the east in the state. How about that?
Yes. And both teams will see each other at the link at the end of the month.
And your team will be a double-digit favorite.
Yes.
I mean, they will be. They'll be a double digit favorite.
As they should be.
And should be. I mean, they've got the better team. Now, they're the better team in part because they've had the better drafting position, things like that. I mean, because, you know, the Steelers, again, the Steelers got into that Atlanta Hawks thing, which is not easy. And that is, you know, you're good enough, but you keep drafting in that 20 to 26 range, 18 to 26. So you're not going to get, you know, a top five pick, a top 10 pick. So, I mean, you know, the Steelers traded up to get a top 10 pick, made the wrong pick. But still. All right. Take a break. Come back. More in a moment. Aeneas Hawkins, final half hour. Philly still winning here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, the best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. And a great service department that backs all of it up. And they're looking for more, even more, technicians because they have that much business. Kevin Warren, press conference today, Minneapolis, Big Ten basketball media days. Penn State goes tomorrow with Carolyn Keeger and Micah Shrewsbury. Because they're splitting up the 2 days. And so Penn State, in fact, Penn State's last tomorrow, as a matter of fact. And he talked about, you know, the future championships. Now that you're going out to the West Coast, do you consider going out there? Maybe you go to the Staples Center. Maybe, I don't know, even Las Vegas, believe it or not. He talked about that. But, of course, he was going to be asked about the possibility of expansion. Now, remember, what was his answer on expansion back at football media days? And it was gung-ho, right? Hey, we're looking, right? Was that's essentially, I'm not using his exact words, but that's pretty close to about what he said, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Complete 180 today.
Well, not 180.
Well, yeah.
Just a more cautious answer today.
Yes.
It was a more measured answer. Measured's always a good word. Something Yankees and Eagles fans not quite in their lexicon. That's okay. Oh, we can make up for it here. You're rarely measured, Matt.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Regarding expansion, Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren said his priority is to make sure we flawlessly integrate USC and UCLA into the Big Ten Conference and take care of the current 14 institutions. Focused on getting the work done now, said needs to be mindful on expansion. That doesn't mean he's ruling it out, but there's a more measured approach to it compared to gung-ho that we heard back in July. Because he is getting the message from his institution, say, look, we got big stuff we need to take care of here. We need to take care of it. They've done a good job of taking care of the current institutions when it comes to the TV contract. They did a great job of taking care of them with that TV contract. Everybody's going to get more money across the board. It's going to make a big difference. It's going to make a big difference. And now they have to figure out a way to make USC and UCLA work with the travel for the two of them, but also the travel for everybody else out there and how to make it work. And do you block schedule? How do you take care of soccer? How do you take care of baseball? How do you take care of gymnastics? How do you take care of track and field? How do you know? There's a lot you need to take care of in this. And that's a huge job. And the commissioner doesn't have to do that. That's why you have a staff. They do that. But again, I thought his answer was about the answer I expected. I expected that answer. I expected more measured. All right. Let's talk a little football now. Aeneas Hawkins. Hawk joins us. Great to have him with us here in the Sunbury Motors studio. Hawk, welcome back. Great to have you with us, man.
Crickets.
Crickets. How you doing?
Doing well, man. Doing well. Staying busy.
Oh, I know you're staying busy. Bye weeks, especially 5 weeks in, everybody's bumped and bruised. Everybody. Practice players are. Players are. So what does a bye week do? Or at least the healing process while still trying to stay sharp football-wise.
Yeah, well, if you're lucky enough to be one of the guys that's playing enough to be beat up and bruised, it's obviously a great opportunity to get healthy. That's number one. That's the most important thing that you get out of a bye week. But aside from that, you know, some people kind of misinterpret it as a week off. It really isn't that. And Mr. Jones is laughing because he knows the deal. You know, it's really just another week of preparation. And the only difference is, you know, from Friday to Saturday, there are no football responsibilities. That little day and a half, 2 days that you get, you know, physical recovery is important too, but it also gives you a second to kind of separate yourself from the game and get around family, get home, which is important for keeping a team locked in for a whole year.
When you were playing, did you watch a lot of football on TV?
I watch no football on TV. I mean, almost none. You don't get to watch very much college football.
Right.
And then Sundays you're in the facility, you know, watching film from the game before that same day.
Right.
So.
See, I think everybody thinks like to play. Hey, it's an off week. I'm going to watch all these games. You know, I'm not going to watch any games.
No.
I'm going to go.
No.
I'm going to have a life.
Yeah. No. The last thing you want to do on your bye week is watch more football. I'll tell you what. That's a promise.
Because that's all you're doing is watching football.
That's it. I actually was just telling my family this is the first time I've turned on football games and like been excited to watch because I'm not in it anymore. I'm not. You know, it's like having your favorite meal 17 times a week. You know, it gets old quick. Go ahead.
Do you watch games? Because of all the film you've watched, you know, film's an old phrase, but okay. All the video that you had to watch of practice, of the opponent, whatever. Do you watch games differently now?
I watch games like I watch film now. You know, you spend so long studying tendencies, looking at schemes. For me, like, I love watching different defenses across the country and across levels because there are certain parallels that you get with all of them, but then there are certain things that you see that you hadn't seen before. I just texted P.J. Musford. The Chiefs played last week on Sunday night, and I saw him run a stunt and run a corner blitz on the same side, and I texted him, like, hey, this is cool. Like, but that's how football players are watching games.
Have you watched much of Michigan yet?
Yeah, I've watched a few of their games. Their D-line stands out immediately to me.
What's interesting about that is they've started a game this year where they started with five DBs, but then this week they started in an old-fashioned Oklahoma 52 defense.
Yep.
And the Okie defense.
Yeah.
Right, because they put Harrell up on the line of scrimmage. So what did you think of the 5-2 Okie look?
Yeah, I hate to say I'm a fan of anything that Michigan does, but I love a 5-2 Okie. I love seeing it. You don't see it as much anymore. But it comes back to the idea of giving teams as much as possible to deal with on film, because it gives them more that they have to prepare for. And, you know, in some ways you don't know what to expect when you walk in on Saturday.
Why do you like the 5-2 Okie?
I think you can just kind of dial up some unique pressures out of it. It's not something that O-lines are seeing a lot of during the season. So, you know, anytime you can give them a look that they haven't seen a whole lot of, it's going to cause problems just because there's so many calls that an offensive line has to make to protect efficiently. And that's really the biggest thing to me.
Because I remember when back in the days, you ask your father about this. The Patriots, when Chuck Fairbanks came in from Oklahoma, he put in essentially an Okie with the Patriots, but it was called a 3-4. Well, what do you think those two linebackers
right.
are?
Right.
Exactly. Where do you think Lawrence Taylor played?
No doubt.
About when it comes down to that. What have you thought about the different looks Manny has dialed up defensively for Penn State?
Yeah, I think they cause a lot of problems for opposing offenses. And I've said this before, I think, you know, just in comparing Coach Pry's defense and Diaz's defense, you know, both of them have had success, and both of them were great defensive coordinators. But Diaz has a little bit more aggression in him, and he's giving a lot of different looks for what those pressures may be. And again, it makes it so hard for an offense to prepare and to know what they're going to get on third and longs, and that's half the battle a lot of times.
And everybody, when it comes time to comparing one guy to another, I always caution everybody, Brent dialed up defenses that matched his personnel.
Absolutely.
Manny is dialing up defenses that matches his current personnel. That's what, you know, and that's what the really good ones do. That's why Brent was really good, and that's why Manny is really good.
And there is a difference in the personnel just in last year to this year. I think if Coach Pry were here this year, he'd probably be dialing up more pressures than he would have in the past, because he has the horses to do it, especially when you talk about the secondary, who can go man up a lot of times and win their one-on-ones.
I was listening before James came on to Sirius, and they had a Michigan guy on who covers them for, I don't know what, some online, whatever they do, a podcast, who cares. And he's talking about the Penn State secondary system and all the yards they've given up and so forth. Have you watched the tape?
Yeah.
I sat there like, I almost pulled over the side of the road. I wanted to call. I said, have you watched any tape?
You can tell when guys aren't watching films. They'll say things like that.
He's like, I mean, look at the stats. Don't look at the stat sheet. Watch the game.
No doubt.
I couldn't believe it.
It's ridiculous.
I could not believe it. Because I feel like they've been the strength of this thing. You know, in terms of like how they play. Everything sets up everything else. That's why I look at the last three games. You look at PJ the last three games.
Yep.
What, you know, he may not be the same guy as maybe before, but the last three games, he sure does look like it.
He's making huge strides every week. You know, I first kind of called it out in that Auburn game where I saw flashes where he looked special again. But now that Northwestern game, the goal line stand, the way he was playing in the run, if they can continue to let him progress like that, if he continues to take those strides, I don't see why he can't get back to where he was. Because to be honest, just watching the film, he's not as far off as people think he is.
Right.
And he's right there. And again, we're playing Michigan, Minnesota, Ohio State. We're going down the pipe here, and it's going to be huge to have that guy back in the middle playing high-level football.
When you watch the Penn State running game, everyone's and justifiably talks about the offensive line and the tight ends and what they mean, you know, especially what Strange has done. But what can the quickness of a running back mean to an offensive line, especially from a defensive player's point of view?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, just as a defensive lineman, you know, it kind of puts you in a cage in a little bit, in a little small kind of way, because realistically, if you're not in your gaps, if you're not being sound in everything that you do, you get a Nick Singleton back there. If he sees it, he can cut back immediately and go make those plays. And every running back can't do that. And there's only a small percentage of them who are capable of doing it. But when you have a guy like that, even if the offensive line is not protecting or is not run blocking as well as they should, there's still opportunity to go hit your head off the goalpost. Because, again, at the college level, every single play, the defensive line is not going to be where they need to be. There's going to be a guy out of a gap, and those guys who are special enough to find it can go make big plays happen because of it.
Right, and we've seen both of them, and Allen, do
Absolutely.
That for Penn State to this point. We talk about situational football. I can only think of one time, and it was that pass down the sideline, that Northwestern end.
Yep.
I think it's the only time I can think all season where somebody got behind the secondary.
Yeah.
So discuss the mentality of a defense, understanding down in distance in situational football.
Yeah, I mean, it changes how you play snap to snap. You know, Coach Pry used to preach. I know Diaz is preaching a lot. Franklin, you know, he's a big situation guy. Every play, you're looking at the sticks, you're looking at the time on the clock, you're looking at where you're at on the field, because all of those things dictate how you play. And just from a defensive line perspective, the way I get in my stance, the way people pass rush or decide to play the run pre-snap changes based on those situations. It's no different in the secondary. The thing that I've liked seeing is the way they've played aggressively in short yardage situations, coming up, playing press man, and not really allowing receivers space to operate and to set their routes up. And in a lot of ways, that sets up the defensive line to go pass rush when it turns into pass in those third and shorts. Because, again, the secondary is playing so aggressive that the D-line has an extended opportunity to get home. I think we've seen some of them, those situations where they've been able to play off of each other and find success.
Jack Ham often talks about, on the broadcast, the ability to read your keys.
Yep.
Now, back in the day, obviously, you know, a fullback would be somebody that, you know, Jack could read, you know, because they'll take you where the ball's going to go.
Yep.
Can you sometimes, just on tape, pick out tells of offensive linemen as to whether they're going to pass block or run block?
Absolutely. And it's the first thing the guys look for when they cut on film on Monday for the opponent the next week. They're looking for pass sets. They're looking for maybe if a guy's light on his hands or maybe he goes heavy. There are certain guys who get into their stance a certain way, and that's going to be sometimes even 100% indicator of run or pass. Then you have things like where the Y lines up, the tight end, and his alignment based on that tackle, especially when he's off of the line of scrimmage. A lot of times his alignment will tell you if you're getting split flow zone or maybe you're getting something outside or even those cram zones. Those are all the things that defenses specifically are looking at as indicators for what they may get.
Because what I'll do in the broadcast booth, I'll look at a stance.
Yep.
Because, I mean, that's the part I can see.
Yep.
I'll look at a stance. How far back is somebody's foot?
Yep.
That tells me they're going to pass block. The other thing I look for is, what's the combination of receivers out there?
Yep.
They'll run three receivers out there. And I've said, they're running the ball here.
Yep. And it's funny because, like, once you're in it, you know, people always, I'm sure the fans see on the TV, they see the cards that list personnel, and they see the other cards with these funky-looking cartoons and colors. But all of it, okay, those coaches are up in the box. They're looking at personnel and down in distance and who's on the field and where.
Yeah.
And that's what those cards are telling the defense because it indicates so much to them.
Right, exactly. Because, they'll run out of three-wide set. I'll think to myself, they've combined for three catches all season. They aren't throwing the ball here.
They're not throwing it there.
Because those catches were all in garbage time in the fourth quarter.
No doubt.
Just out there to just take up space.
Yep.
Right? And that you know. But in the other part about looking at stances, how do you view this week's game?
I think it's a good opportunity. I'm excited because I think Penn State has the horses to go in there and get it done. And I think the keys to victory are keys that Penn State can execute upon. Stopping the run is something that I feel confident that Penn State's defense can do. And I think if they do that, Michigan's offense is going to have a hard time putting points on the board. Now I look at, you know, how is the Penn State O-line going to hold up against what I think is a Michigan D-line that's impressive. And again, I look at the horses and I look at the body of work, especially in that Auburn game, and I think they can get that job done. And then obviously the biggest thing to me is you're going on the road into a tough environment, and Penn State has benefited now from going to Purdue and going to Auburn. This isn't a team that's timid in away games, and I think that they're going to capitalize this weekend.
Brilliant as always, my friend. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Jones. Appreciate you.
Aeneas Hawkins here in the Sunbury Motors studio, and we'll come back, update the baseball playoffs in a moment. Right now, it's the road teams winning on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory-trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
The biggest thing right now, and we have come up with what we're calling some of our can't-miss priorities, and one of the can't-miss priorities is to make sure that we flawlessly integrate our new media partners, but the other big one is to make sure that we flawlessly integrate USC and UCLA into the Big Ten Conference. So in the climate that we're in right now in college athletics, you also always have to be mindful of expansion, but our priority is just to make sure that, one, we take care of our 14 member institutions now from a basketball standpoint, from a conference standpoint, and that we do everything that we possibly can to make sure that we flawlessly integrate USC and UCLA into the Big Ten Conference. We have a lot of work to do. It's one thing to negotiate contracts, to make an announcement, but it's another thing to actually get the work done, and that's what we're focused on right now.
A little different answer than July, isn't it? The Phillies have won. They survived the ninth inning, winning 7-6. Matt Olson did a three-run homer. Then Nick Castellanos made a great play in right field. It probably took away extra bases. And Zach Eflin got out of it. The Phillies win the all-important opener 7-6. The bottom line is they won it. Meanwhile, the Mariners are winning. They lead it over the Astros 5-2 in the top half of the fourth inning.
You, sir, are my hero!
So that's where that stands. Again, Seattle leads 5-2, top of the fourth.
You love to see it.
It's the fourth inning, Matt. Just, you know, just kind of slow down, okay? I mean your team's going to get swept. How's that going to feel? I mean, you don't have the pitching. You only have one guy on offense.
Oh, they got a couple guys back now. Rizzo's back.
Yeah, that's a great 218 average. Yeah, that's a lot of offense. Great. The Yankees should win that series in three. They had more offense. The Indians have better pitching. The Guardians have better pitching. A much better bullpen, but the Yankees' offense is exponentially better than Cleveland's.
I don't know. I think it's a five-game series.
And the Phillies now come back with Zach Wheeler on natural rest tomorrow against Kyle Wright. Great start for the Phillies.